Blog Talk Radio.
Cellular regeneration, or are you contributing towards cellular death, DNA mutation, cancer, and a host of chronic diseases without even knowing it? Welcome to the program. My name is Dr. Millie. I am a naturopathic doctor. I am a nutrition specialist, and this is Eating for Meaning, which is a year-long nutrition program to teach you how to change your relationship to food. And so using four principles of nutrition, adventure, mindfulness, and epigenetics, I teach you how to become aware of your food and enjoy your food and notice the reactions that the food has on your body so that you can quickly and easily make changes that not only benefit your overall wellness, improving your energy and reducing risk for chronic disease, reducing and resolving symptoms, but also change your DNA because we can change our gene expression, which is our genetic makeup, so that we do not pass on diabetes or we do not pass on Alzheimer's, or we do not pass on the risk for breast cancer or prostate cancer to our next generations, and that's the field of epigenetics. So I want to welcome you to the show, as every week we discuss these topics and more, because we're always pushing the boundaries of what's going on in the health field. And today I've got a really amazing guest for you. We'll be interviewing today John Connors. John Connors is a business coach. He's an activist who's committed to the social movement of prosumerism. And we're going to talk all about prosumerism today and what that means. Prosumers are proactive consumers that use their passion and skills to amplify the brands and services they love. And John is an avid recreational cyclist and a communicator who enjoys making the complicated palatable to a large audience. So I hope we're going to do that today, because enjoy that is taking great big ideas, complicated ideas, and delivering them in an absorbable and digestible manner. And so John is embarking on Prosume Our Future Ride Across America. And
yeah, John, this is Paula, the producer. It looks like she's dropped.
She was dropped, okay.
Yeah, you were fine. We're on the air. So
you want to just plug me in to start talking about it and just say Millie was dropped? And
yeah, I would say so, because I don't know what happened. You're sounding good. I don't know what happened.
Sure.
She just got dropped. So she'll probably call in. So let's go in. I'm curious myself. On what this is, first a little bit about yourself and how you got there. You're a business coach and activist. There seems to be a whole new way that I see. Here she is, so let's bring her back on.
Sure.
Dr. Millie, you there?
I am, and so I'm not sure what happened there. I guess I was dropped from the line, so I'm not sure what time that happened, but today I'm interviewing John Connors. And John Connors is here to talk about prosumerism and his Prosume Our Future Ride Across America. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great today, Millie. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And so this is a fascinating topic, and this is a topic that I'm so interested in, just in how to develop an ethical business model and also how to reach more people. And so I'm so happy to have you on the show today, because at least what's going on in New York, but I think all around the world, is that our economy is changing, would you say?
Oh, big time. Yeah, I mean, even the preconceived, you know, small assumptions that we make as a collective are absolutely changing before our eyes at the moment in time. So we're in an exciting moment of how do we craft and create the future, and proactivity is really the key in order to making that happen. Whereas consumers sit back and sort of are fed things from the marketplace, prosumers actively shape and sculpt and mold their current reality as well as their future. So I'm excited to help others step into that role and have a great time proselytizing the message. You still there, Millie? Millie may have dropped again, so I'll just continue on about prosumerism. Well, prosumerism was first coined by a futurist named Alvin Toffler in 1980 in his book called The Third Wave. And just briefly, the third wave articulated how society changes, civilization changes in massive waves, not linear, square-like. And the first wave was the agricultural wave, which was very self-sufficient. Land ownership equals power. And that wave pretty much ended in 1850, thousands of years of man's existence. And then industrialization really took the helm. And the industrial wave at this moment in time runs the world today, though it's wavering in influence and power. And consumers are what drive the industrial wave to keep it flowing, keep it pumping out mass-produced goods that are then sold in mass-produced fashion via PR and such. We're moving into an information wave, a time where people are tailor-making their products and services to meet their needs. Imagine a home that instead of buying furniture at IKEA, you have a 3D printer at your home where you can make specialized products specifically for your household. We have the cheap manufacturing capacity to make that a reality today, though it takes proactivity by on the end of the consumer. It takes a prosumer to decide how to design their household in order to make that a reality. So this goes well beyond just the living arrangement. Goes into communication, so social media, and this could even yield fruit and results in our political spectrum as well.
And so who does prosumerism speak to? Who could become a prosumer?
Well, everybody, I mean, as I was saying about the agricultural wave, everybody was a prosumer back in the day. I mean, you sort of made what you could with what you had. So it's in our DNA, as you know very well from your work. It's in our DNA to produce and consume at the same time. So really, who is on the precipice of prosumerism at this moment in time would be people that are renting out their rooms on Airbnb. So instead of the traditional consumer hotelier model, the new hospitality model of you taking your own public space and renting it out to other people, you're fully participating in that marketplace. You're yielding results by renting out your home, your room. Postmates, the delivery service. Uber is the car sharing style service, where some people would call that element sharing economy. It's really a huge element of the prosumer evolution of the economy. And a lot of the friction we're seeing in the marketplace arises from industrial companies fighting the new evolution of the prosumer wave.
And so, yeah, so if you're in New York, if you're taking subways and if you're going around the city, you're definitely, Airbnb was a really controversial legal battle for them to stay in business. And even now, there's so many regulations on whether or not renters can rent out or sublease their own space for other people who are wanting to, you know, a New York experience but not wanting to pay the hotel prices. And
sure,
they can directly contribute towards the income of New Yorkers. And New York, you know, New York is a very expensive place to live. And but now on the after Airbnb has certainly, they won, I guess, a certain amount of rights for their company so that New Yorkers can, do have some rights to rent out their homes. And now you're seeing it on subways that Airbnb is good for New Yorkers. It's good for the economy. And so what would you say to somebody, is prosumerism better for the economy than consumerism? What's the difference there?
Yeah, a great question. So basically, consumerism requires perpetual economic growth. It's kind of a symmetric GDP that we use to measure success in our society is how many goods and services are being produced in the nation itself. And there's almost a religious belief from our political leadership that economic growth is the end game. Well, so with that, consumerism is better at growing GDP. Unfortunately, when you have GDP as an indicator of success, you end up with a really expensive healthcare, which yields results in GDP. You have never-ending wars, 15 years of warfare, which actually benefits GDP. We have for-profit prisons in this nation, which 25% of the world's prison population exists in the United States of America itself, and it benefits GDP. So the prosumer information wave is probably not as beneficial for such a two-dimensional metric such as GDP, but it's definitely better for the fulfillment of those participating in the macroeconomy itself. And those of us at the cutting edge of this are thinking about what are other metrics for collective success. The small mountain country of Bhutan has come out with gross happiness index. That doesn't really ring true to a lot of Americans. It feels fluffy. So there are other potential results that we could strive for to reach more towards our actualization aspirations rather than our status and industrial prowess that GDP represents.
And so do you think that the idea or the capitalist foundation on which the United States is essentially built, do you think that it goes hand in hand with prosumerism, or is prosumerism something other than capitalism?
Oh, great question. Actually, this is real capitalism. And then, you know, no offense to anyone in the status quo in the United States of America, but what we have right now, according to a textbook definition, would be called oligarchical capitalism. And an oligarchy is a word that represents rule of the few. So what we have is rules that were made by people who were great at the game in the 1890s and fixed the game to still be in their benefit. So prosumer way of doing business is completely like real capitalism, like real grassroots support your neighbor, buy local. But it's not just buy local, it's buy what you're passionate about. It's buy what you're excited about. And don't just buy it, advocate for the goods that you're really excited about. Because when you take your energy, time, and effort towards amplifying companies that have your values in the marketplace will end up reflecting your values.
Yeah, and so as an idealist, I really feel like prosumerism rings true with me, and one reason why I invited you on my show is because people who are owning companies and having websites and owning their own small businesses, which more and more Americans are all the time, and trying to kind of remove ourselves from cheap goods and toxic goods, and there's so many benefits as a healthcare worker and a healthcare provider to being lower tech, more grassroots, and I love the idea of establishing relationships with people that I connect with mentally and philosophically and ethically and supporting their businesses. So is prosumerism affordable?
Absolutely. So right now you offer a platform via Blog Talk Radio for other people. You're offering like a prosumer incubator to talk about other people's products and services. You have a megaphone that you give this already, just naturally. So So prosumerism isn't anything that's that much different than what we do every day. But because we don't have a verb assigned to it, a lot of times people don't notice that little thread that connects the activities that will create a completely different economy. So you already do it. And what we've discussed about, you know, you giving me coaching as I go cross country about, you know, my nutrition that's needed for me to get from 3,150 miles from coast to coast on a bicycle. I mean, as you tell me this information and help me develop my body and mind into a strong stance, I'm going to be spreading the message about your work around the nation to various different people, spreading about Blog Talk Radio, your channel, to different people in different marketplaces. So not only is it affordable, it's actually much more affordable than having to pay a large PR firm to spread a message across the board. This is grassroots PR. This is proactive for the people PR, proactive product development for other firms that might want to make a specific offering, but they don't really know if it's going to scale or not. You can take a small subset of your really excited, raving prosumer fan base around them that maybe they pay a discounted price for, and you prototype that out until it really works and open it up to a larger marketplace. It's extremely affordable. It's business for the people, by the people.
So really what I'm hearing are concepts of bartering, like there's a bartering aspect to it, there's a community aspect to it, there's an advertising aspect to it, but whereas, I mean, I could never go out and afford to hire an advertising agency, or would I even have you know, a corporate platform or message that an advertising company would really want to take it. And so whereas working with you, and because we do have, we have an understanding, and we have kind of a common goal, I guess, in a way, even though we have absolutely separate businesses, we can work together using these principles.
Wholeheartedly. I believe prosumerism, yes, absolutely to what you said, and I believe prosumerism can help redevelop industrial areas that are in disarray. I think that if people really subscribe to this social movement, we can take cities like Detroit and redevelop and revitalize them without asking for a single dollar from the centralized government. It's decentralized, grassroots, bootstrapping, you know, old American way of us interconnecting, purchasing only the products and services from companies that share our values, like you and I share such similar values. It's a no-brainer to do business together.
And so how can regular people then turn a passion that they have, or even a hobby that they have, or a product that they want to develop into some kind of favorable arrangement for them personally, where they're actually making money and not just, you know, exposing other people to their ideas?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now I'm putting together a prosumer, you know, series on video. One will be how companies can capitalize on a prosumer excited base of people, and another will be all about how each individual can sort of make a list of the products and services that they're already really excited about, and then have scripts of how to call the director of marketing of those specific companies and create arrangements with them of what would be most beneficial. I can't say exactly how it's going to work for each person, because each person really needs to express their own level of passion and excitement for the products they're really excited about. I can only give examples of how I'm going to do it cross-country and then showcase the results to everybody. I'm going to open up my results to everybody who tunes into my ride to see how much traffic did I yield for you, Dr. Millie? How much of that web traffic turned, where was this a really excited customer base that shared a similar value set? And was that, did that yield fruit for both for you and for me, because I'm proving the point that prosumerism is a more effective way to do business. So
that's
why I'm a coach, you know, and not everybody gets that right away, and I'm okay with that. I believe that each person has their own unique expression of what they're excited about in the marketplace, and all they need is just a little handholding or a little encouragement and a little framework to work with it to turn their lifestyle. It's basically like lifestyle loyalty points. It's the loyalty points lifestyle. So instead of just getting mileage points from Delta, imagine being a real advocate for your local yoga studio. And when you bring in X amount of clients, you reduce the cost of you going there. So maybe you don't get a dollar return immediately, but you get less of an expense in your lifestyle because you hook them up with people that were in, you know, that shared similar values. You can do that.
And if we look at economics, corporate economics, or then that is an aspect of how we create. Saving money is just as important as making money, right? So when you're saving money, you are, in a sense, making money.
Well said. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so today we are interviewing John Connors. He's a business coach and he's an activist committed to the social movement of prosumerism, which is a merging of two concepts, being the producer and being the consumer. Why separate them at all? We are all producers of our own consumption. Why not? And he is cycling across the country. He's embarking on the Prosume Our Future ride across America. And we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to interview him more about this ride across America and what he plans to achieve, how he's training, and we have lots more to talk about. This is Dr. Millie, host of Eating for Meaning on Blog Talk Radio. Join me back.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com. The largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
And welcome back. This is Dr. Millie. I'm the host of Eating for Meaning. And on Eating for Meaning, we talk about how to make our bodies healthy. But part of it also is the mindfulness of where our food comes from and what kind of ethical values we are supporting and what kind of economic values we are supporting. And so that's why I feel it's relevant for us all to get a little bit more in touch with the world economy and alternate economies and how we can create a better one for ourselves. And creating and participating in a better, more sustainable, more ethical economy that kind of maybe cuts out the corporation, gets the cheap junk out of our life really that we don't want and don't need and costs us more money and energy overall, that we can actually develop a better quality of life and support ourselves with people and goods and that really support our own values. And it also, no matter where you are on your spectrum of understanding the concept or being in touch with the concept of prosumerism, you can always, I think, learn from this guy who I'm interviewing today. His name is John Connors, and he's a business coach. He's an activist committed to the social movement of prosumerism. And he is not just a coach because he is actually living, eating, and breathing it by traveling across this grand country of ours on a quest. And so, John, tell us about your Prosume Our Future ride across America, please.
Sure, Millie. Thank you. So, yeah, I'm beginning in either late May or early June, and I'm beginning to ride. I'm riding up New York State through Detroit, through Chicago, through the center of the country, all the way to San Francisco. So right now I'm training my body by delivering via a prosumer delivery company called Postmates. So I spend about 4 or 5 hours a night riding 30 to 40 miles and delivering people things throughout Manhattan and Brooklyn as a way to monetize my my training process, as well as live the prosumer ethos in all that I do. The ride will consist of meeting with people who are already living prosumerism. They just might not have already called it that. So I'm going to be having, you know, many different conversations with people, maybe even having dinner in people's homes. I was trained as a Culinary Institute chef as a younger man, so I have no problem cooking up meals for groups of people, and really trying to bring back that interconnected personal element of human-to-human contact and really kind of percolate that into back into the economy.
Wow, so you're purposely, working for your dinner, so to speak, even if you are the one cooking dinner yourself, as you travel across country on bicycle in order to meet other prosumers?
Yes, and I'm encouraging every single person who tunes in for the ride. I'm going to take my GoPro camera, and I'm going to take a small audio recorder so that I can really take a snapshot of what people think about their own future in society, you know, in America itself, as well as, you know, the macro global situation. And I'm encouraging the viewers to plug in and say, hey, my aunt is in Kansas City, John. You can camp in her front yard for a night and maybe stop and have dinner there, and then have, you know, maybe she'll invite people from the neighborhood around. So I'm really counting on a prosumer base of support to help point me in the right direction as I go cross country, and I believe it will become like a wave. By the time I get to San Francisco, there'll be a huge amount of momentum for this social movement, and we'll take the next step from there.
Wow, that's so inspiring. So it's really kind of an activist bike trip, and you will be picking up supporters as well as contacts and connections along the way. And so who did you start with? Like, what are your, who do you have so far? Can you tell
Great
us about question. any of your contacts?
Yeah, so, I mean, my first stop along the way will be at my permaculture instructor. His space, Andrew Faust, has the Center for Bioregional Living in Ellenville, about 60 miles outside of New York City. And permaculture is a whole systems design way to create agriculture in a way that would be not as industrial. So you wouldn't have all the chemical inputs to make a flourishing ecosystem that feeds you and your family for a long period of time. So it's very important for me to sit and talk with him, because he's been a rooting force and mentor in my personal development as I go. Then as I go cross country, I diverted the trip that was going to go through the center of the country through Detroit, because I believe many permaculturists call it turning waste into resources. And I don't mean to offend anyone from Detroit in calling it a waste, especially real estate value-wise, as not being a very valuable area in the United States, though it has full rail lines, many buses that go there, an international airport. It has all of the infrastructure to really be a cultural hub for this new networked economy, and you can buy a home for $5,000 that you'd have to rebuild up. And there are many cultural, early adopters moving there quickly. And I could see that and other cities like that around the country that have dissipated under the industrial model really being fertile ground to become the space for the new prosumer network model.
And so, do you have any contacts in Detroit? Do you have people who are excited that you're coming? Not to put you on the spot if you don't, but have you?
Yeah, I do at the moment. The main contact I have is a friend from Occupy Wall Street who started the Detroit Water Brigade. His name is Justin Weeds, and he's a real advocate for communication. And he came over there seeing that a lot of people were having their water shut off. So he got together an entire group and started supplying people with water alternatives, as well as paying water bills for people that were backed up. So a real advocate for people's basic needs that city government in at that moment in time has not been giving people their basic needs, such as water.
Wow, and so you're going to have such a great trip because you're traveling around meeting people who are absolutely inspired by what they're doing, and they're inspiring others and they're inspiring you. And so it's hard to imagine that this would not be absolutely infectious and that so many people would want you coming by. So how do people reach out to you? I mean, I'll ask you this throughout the show as we continue for the next hour, but how do people reach out to you if they want to get
great
involved?
Call. Yeah, I'm Prosumer Coach, Prosumer. coach@gmail.com is my email address. And I use Tumblr, T-U-M-B-L-R, as a way to, like, I don't believe that stagnant websites have an enormous amount of value in society right now. I believe where digital communications add huge value are the perpetual conversations that go on. So instead of having a stagnant website that I would draw traffic to, I use Tumblr, which is a social media platform, as well as like a microsite called prosumercoach.tumblr.com, prosumerfuture.tumblr.com, and I'm going to have Prosum Detroit and a few others before I get going, but they'll all be filtered on prosumercoach.tumblr.com before the ride.
Okay, wonderful. And so what is the point, or I know it's the journey is the point, I know that, but what are you going to do in San Francisco?
Oh, great question. So San Francisco is the hub of technology investment, and technology just for technology's sake, as far as, you know, the isolation that may have arisen from our obsessed cellular culture isn't what I think will change this world. What I do believe, though, are venture capitalists and Silicon Valley people, they've been using an investment methodology that I believe can change society and really drop seeds for future growth that could stabilize the United States and change our economy overnight. So what I'm doing is I'm working with, like I said, a select, maybe between 5 to 10 companies, how much this ride can yield fruit to them, you being one of them. And then by the time I get to San Francisco, I'm looking to meet with various venture capitalists and technology entrepreneurs to showcase to them the results that this ride yielded and articulate possible investment plans and see if I can raise some capital to do something like revitalizing Prosum Detroit, to see if we can take $100,000 and turn it into huge, impactful work. So.
Wow. So you really have big plans for this trip. And what does the regular corporation or the industrial corporation model, what do they think about prosumerism?
Great question. So I'll give you a little context on this to answer this. Open source software is one of the best prosumer movements that have ever hit humanity. And what open source software is, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, everybody who has a cell phone, everybody who has a computer, much of that operating system is built by programmers who in their spare time for free, you know, invest their time building code. And how that works is, instead of one single company could never compete with an operating system such as Linux that has millions of people worldwide who are sharpening their skills in their spare time trying to craft and create an open source platform that does yield monetary results later on. But at first, when they're first creating it, it doesn't always look like it's going to yield results. Why would you come home from work as a coder and code more for free? Well, one company that was one of consumer staples, IBM, had been around for years and years and was on a track for failure. They call it the death spiral in business school. And as IBM was looking glacial and looking as though it was going to die, he realized, hey, this open source movement is really not being fully embraced by large software companies. So what they started to do was invest enormous sums of money and enormous resources in developing these open source platforms. So they became leaders in the open source world, and it turned their consumer failing company into a prosumer behemoth. So many corporations have a similar perspective and possibility. In the hotel world, there's less because many of them are refusing to even recognize Airbnb as a competitor. But you have the Ace Hotel Group, for instance, who makes a lot of their revenue from the products and services they sell in-house, which most hotel groups don't do that. Most hotel groups make their money from room revenue sales. So what Ace does is they have a small collection of artisanal goods that they prosume and really showcase to their population. And what that ends up doing is yielding a real cult following that purchases rooms for not an extremely large amount of money, and they know they're going to be surrounded by products and services that meet their needs. So that would be another example of a company that's straddling the consumer-prosumer line, whereas Airbnb is a prosumer company, and the Ritz-Carlton, for instance, would be a purely consumer company. So other corporations really could do some wonderful things. I mean, it's all about, do they want to be on the cutting edge of the new way and be really successful in an innovative paradigm? Or do they want to play old oligarchy capitalism games, such as let's create rules that are in our favor but don't favor the innovation and change that's inevitable in the evolution of the marketplace right now? So any company playing the old consumer fighting legal games is just a dinosaur and will more than likely be replaced within the next 2 decades.
I mean, these companies, these corporations are really still the biggest powerhouses economically in the United States. And, of course, they outsource so many jobs to India and, I mean, so much is outsourced to China or Russia or all these places all over the world, which really has created this global village. How does prosumerism fit into the concept of the global village and the international economy?
Great call. Well, any prosumer knows that the macroeconomy is this way because they participated in it. So the fatalist perspective that many consumer activists have, such as we can't change a thing, really stems from basic even economic theory and old school assumptions that the market's always in equilibrium and we can't change the whole organism. A prosumer really has a different perspective on that. They recognize that if they have an issue with a company because a company is really toxically, giving problems and polluting your local area, it would be a prosumer's duty to create a boycott for said company, which then that company, of course, because they legally have to create shareholder value for their investors, would change their behavior. Prosumers recognize they are very much creators in the marketplace. And this is where this is why it's a consciousness evolution. This is why proactive consumers can really be at the cutting edge of what's next in society, because there's nothing fatalist about a large multinational corporation. They have no control over an empowered prosumer.
All right, very well said. And if you are listening and you have any questions for the guest today, John Connors, please do call us at 914-338-1887. That's 914-338-1887. If you have any questions at all, we are talking about some huge concepts today. We are talking about the changing economic model that will or will not essentially take over the American economy. I mean, people are so I think people are so discouraged and disheartened by corporate America and the fact that there's no separation between the government and the corporation and this even this oligarchical corporations that you're talking about or these corporate monopolies where that so few people have all the money and are dictating the economy. And this really, it's kind of the idea of startups. Like people are just dropping out of the banking game, or they're dropping out of the of working for their corporation. They don't want to be in middle management. They don't want to be, plebs at their work anymore. And people who have great ideas, it's a phenomenon going on right now that people are opening up their own startups, and some of them are making a tremendous amount of money doing that. And you mentioned Uber, and I know Uber is one of the most successful startups in the United States in the past couple of years. And so do you think that this is meaningful at all for how it's shifting?
Yes, absolutely. So Uber and Lyft, both, car sharing services that the industrialized taxi cab model is fighting against consistently. So when you see, and this is all I want to do is help change, put on a pair of glasses for society. When we see city officials and companies attacking Lyft and Airbnb for their actions, let's think back to the Amish when industrialization were happening. The Amish are beautiful, and they have a great life, and they do really wonderful things, and they are actually prosumers. That said, the Amish didn't want evolution to occur. So they're okay. They have their own little subset of the population where they continue to live their agrarian first wave lifestyle, and they have a good life. But all of the population isn't Amish. So I lovingly use that metaphor when I see industrial people and industrial perspectives fighting against the guaranteed networked evolution that's coming. It's they can be Amish too. We can hold a little space off for bold industrialists. Power shift is a guarantee. And especially with the next 10 years, as more and more baby boomers leave the workplace and Generation X, who started the internet in the 90s, begin taking over these power positions, the shift will become much more rapid because every generation younger has been connected to networks since they were born almost. I mean, I'm 33, so I wasn't, but this interconnectivity is in our DNA, is in our bones. The shift is going to come quick.
And so if you have any questions for John Connors, he's a business coach and an activist committed to the social movement of prosumerism. And we're talking about some really large phenomenons that are going on in the world economy right now and predictions that everybody from business analysts to billionaires to astrologists are making predictions that the corporate economy is absolutely changing and moving away from certain industrial consumer goods and more towards smaller and more towards, let's say, prosumeristic or high-quality goods. If you have any questions for John Connors, give us a call at 914-338-1887. That's 914-338-1887. And if you're enjoying this show, this is Eating for Meaning on Blog Talk Radio, where we really talk about a lot of issues related to food and how you make yourself healthy and how you change your relationship to food. And part of changing your relationship to food, not to link it too abstractly, but part of changing your relationship to food is really realizing where you are in your own economy, where you are in the food economy. So for instance, it does bring Food Babe to mind. She's a food activist, and she's really started by she was a layperson, a corporate America person who ended up being made ill by the foods that she was eating and just eating the standard American diet, the sad diet, until she hooked up with a nutritionist and started realizing that it was the food that was making her sick. And then she was on all these medications because food was making her sick. And so she was on steroid medications, and she had autoimmune conditions, and she was overweight, and all of these. She felt had no energy. And once she realized that it was the food, she really started lobbying the government. She started lobbying Monsanto, and she started lobbying all of these kind of the big food industry, the General Mills and Kraft and Post and all of these cereal makers, and against what ingredients they include in their food, the bad quality genetically modified foods that are making us sick, the food additives that are allowed to be used in America but are banned in other countries in the world, the fact that there are, that in the United States right now we are contaminated with 2,500 so-called edible chemicals that are in our food supply, and the FDA, these are FDA-approved chemicals, and they have, but it's out of their hands. The FDA actually has no idea how many chemicals, how many toxic chemicals the average American is eating on a daily basis, chemicals that have been associated with obesity and cancers and diabetes and Alzheimer's disease. And so somebody like the Food Babe, she just goes around, has a blog and spreads information, and now she's got a new, you know, best-selling book on the New York Times bestsellers list, and she's done a phenomenal, she's become a phenomenal success in doing what I would say is prosumerist capitalism, coming out of corporate America like she did. So, yeah, do you know about her?
I don't know about her. One of the things I would say similar to that is where we could take an even further step away from the consumer food-based model that exists. And let's admit, food is subsidized by the U.S. government, so it's really cheap. So because food is really cheap and consumers tend to do things unconsciously, they unconsciously purchase cheap food, prosumers can begin thinking about what would it take to grow a portion of my own food? Growing our own organic seeds, I know that if I were to purchase a property in Detroit for about $15,000 after my ride across country, I could create an underground, about 5 foot underground greenhouse called the Walpini. And this Walpini could be made from purely recycled material. And if it were about 20 feet wide and self-facing, I could grow and have fish that support about 90% of my caloric needs, all from my own individual prosumer-based space. So it's a step beyond where we're currently at, but a lot of food activists get caught up in that Washington needs to change. Washington is not going to change. We have to change Washington. And we change Washington by changing our habits at home every day. And if we change our life, on such, and not everybody has to go to the drastic measure of growing all their own food, but it does create a level of stability and helpfulness in one's life where you'd never have to go out and purchase foods with these additives that you discussed. You'd jar your own stuff. You'd pickle your own stuff. You'd live a much cheaper lifestyle. So if you do have an information business online and most of your goods are covered in a small prosumer home base, you can have a very successful, comfortable, happy life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there is lots of, you know, too good to be true kind of theorizing about this, because the average consumer is not even close to doing that. But I totally agree with you. It I mean, it's absolutely possible for people to start implementing some level of food growing industry within their own home. So whether or not you choose to buy a window herb garden, you're growing fresh herbs in your window, and you're able to feed your family fresh basil, and that basil is actually an intensely nutritious green vegetable with antibiotic properties, and not only does it make you feel good because of its beautiful smell and its wonderful taste, it improves the flavor of your food, but it also improves your overall nutrition if you were to consume it daily. Or last week I had a friend of yours on the show, actually. His name is James Ray, and he's a vegan chef. And we were talking about sprouting.
And sprouting, I mean, is the simplest way to grow green vegetables in your home in the winter. You don't even need sunshine. All you need is a glass jar, some seeds or some beans or some lentils and some water. And that's all you need in order to grow fresh green vegetables. You don't even need soil. And so there are some ways that people can just easily learn to implement some of these ideas in their life, even if you're feeling overwhelmed by the concept of, oh, all of a sudden you've got to grow all your own food.
Yeah. I like to push boundaries, because if you push people's boundaries of what's possible, and that's why I hang out with permaculturists, because my teacher does have 14 acres, and he does grow a lot of his own food. Not all of it, of course. And hanging around with people who are doing that, who are community gardening and reaping those benefits, is something I like to play with. But that said, for my ride, as you're going to coach me for my nutrition advice, would you recommend I make space in one of my 4 bike bags to sprout some seeds so that I would consistently have highly nutritious green-style food and not have to worry about some of the food deserts I'll be coming across through the center of the nation?
I mean, wouldn't that be cool if you could actually have a continual supply of fresh vegetables as you cycle across America? And it's kind of like, it's essentially you'd have to buy, say you bought lentils or the chickpeas, or you bought almonds, or you bought buckwheat, or you can sprout any of those things as long as they haven't been irradiated. And all you need is a container and some water and a couple of days. And then those
and
could
be
sprouting.
And bag, and it would not have any issue on it whatsoever?
You'd have to take it out and give it some light. I don't think they grow in absolute pitch darkness, but you don't need direct sunshine in order to sprout.
Okay, excellent.
So if you are, you know, cooking dinner for somebody, then you could certainly, you know, do your rinsing and, aerate the whole situation. They have to be soaked for about, depending on what you're sprouting, you have to put them in a container and have them soak for about 8 to 12 hours so that they soften, and then the germ can actually take, so it can germinate. And then after that, you just need to rinse it every 4 hours. So even when you stop for water breaks or when you stop to cook somebody dinner or to have a meeting, then you could do the rinsing and exposing the seeds to the air at that point. And then within a couple of days, depending again on what it is that your shoes are sprouting, you've got good sprouts. You can seal them up and you've got those good sprouts for a couple of days until you've eaten them all.
That is a great way to subsidize my diet. And as I told you, there's a company that will remain nameless that does make, you know, hemp seeds and things like that, that I am courting for sponsorship. And I would love to be sprouting some of their stuff if this sponsorship arrangement comes up. But even if it doesn't, that's great advice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how are you training for this cross? You mentioned that you were doing deliveries in the city, in New York, mm-hmm. and in Brooklyn. But how else are you? And we're starting a relationship here where I'm going to help you with some training advice and help you to beef up your endurance and your stamina for cycling and help you with your recovery as well. But what are you doing right now? What do you have going?
Well, I've developed some good habits, yet I do have some bad habits. So at the moment in time, the way to get myself motivated, especially in a zero-degree day in the middle of February in New York City, I have been drinking a little bit too much coffee as a way to motivate myself. And I have been, you know, eating sugar as a way to sustain my blood sugar, but not in a helpful way. So I'm really looking forward to having great real advice coming from an expert like yourself, because I know I'm biohacking the wrong way.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you just admitted all this. That's great, John. I'm so happy that you're being honest here live on the radio, and this is live radio. We did not rehearse this.
Cool.
And as we speak, John Connors is here at Mountain. It's the home of Eating for Meaning, and it's my clinic where I operate out of, and it's in Crown Heights in Brooklyn. And we're here, and John
called me early this morning or before the show saying that he was going to be a little late. He had was having some bike problems. And for any of you who are in New York today on March 5th, 2015, it is an absolute snowstorm here today. So I was thinking to myself, is he having bike problems? Yeah, does he mean the weather? And no, of course, he meant brake problems. And I was even so surprised that you were even getting on your bike to come over here. So you are really committed to the task. And then what we did was we had coffee before the show. And so thankfully, I had some magenta ginseng, local beet, local apple, American ginseng juice for you, which I'm pouring to you at the moment. And so I'm going to hydrate you, and then we're going to talk about when we come back. We're going to I'm going to give you some nutrition tips on stamina. Mm. And for any of you listening at home, you are welcome to call in if you have any questions for John Connors. He is a business coach, he is an activist, and he is committed to the social movement of prosumerism. He's cycling across the country, embarking on what he calls the Prosume Our Future Ride Across America, and he has a wonderful prosumeristic plan to stop in at various prosumer business contacts that he has and he will be making as he embarks across the country towards Silicon Valley to pitch the concept of prosumerism to various companies. And this, the end point of this is to grow prosumerism, to change our economy, to give us better quality goods, to give us better quality of life, and to create consumers who are actually producing the goods that they are consuming. And this makes us all healthier, makes us all more engaged and in touch and connected with each other, as well as the goods that we are surrounding ourselves with. And it's a wonderful ideology, as well as we are talking about how we can put it into place on a practical level. I'm going to go to break, but in a minute when we come back, we are going to continue our conversation with John Connors. If you do have any questions, give us a call here at Eating for Meaning on Blog Talk Radio. The number is 914-338-1887. Again, the phone number is 914-338-1887.
Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today.
Absolutely.
And meet
very
your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com. Are you single and ready for an extraordinary relationship? This is Jill Crosby, owner of SpiritualSingles.com, the largest exclusively conscious dating site online. We provide conscious, spiritually evolved singles an easy, fun, effective venue to meet other like-hearted spiritual singles. Join for free today and meet your soulmate, twin flame, poly partners, and or friends on SpiritualSingles.com. That's SpiritualSingles.com.
She wants to know where the relationship is going. He didn't know it was going anywhere. Having an awareness of our differences can make or break a relationship. As men and women, we have no problem falling in love. The problem is staying in love. Janice Hoffman gives men and women easy-to-use tools to keep the passion alive in their relationship. The former training director for Mars Venus Institute, Janice Hoffman trained over 550 Mars Venus facilitators and counselors and developed curriculum for the Mars Venus workshops. Today, she is the award-winning author of Relationship Rules, 12 Strategies for Creating a Love That Lasts. Don't do more in your relationship. Do what you already do differently. Let Janice Hoffman teach you the skills to keep the passion alive. Get the passion back with Relationship Rules. Visit JaniceHoffman.com today and get your own autographed copy of Relationship Rules.
All right, and welcome back. My name is Dr. Millie Lytle, and I'm a naturopathic doctor, and I'm a certified nutrition specialist, and I'm the founder of a year-long nutrition program called Eating for Meaning. And
Eating for Meaning has a workbook, which you can purchase on Amazon.com. It's on Kindle Direct Publishing. And on my birthday, on March 15th, Amazon will be putting that workbook on for free. So you're able to get the online version of the workbook for free on March 15th. But up until that point, I believe it's about $4.49 on Amazon.com. Or if you'd like the hard copy of the book, it is available through the publisher Create Space. And you can check out my website at milliesays.com for more information on the Eating for Meaning workbook and how to purchase it. My website, again, is milliesays, MilliesSays.com. And Eating for Meaning is a nutrition program designed to help you heal your relationship to food. And that starts with your own acknowledgement of the symptoms that food is having on your health on a daily basis. Every single time that you put any food into your mouth, you have an opportunity to either heal your body or to make yourself sick. And if you're not paying attention to the impact that food has on you, then you are bypassing this opportunity to heal yourself. Now, nobody's perfect. The goal is not perfection. We are not trying to have a perfect diet, nor is that the goal. However, we are trying to understand which foods are having a positive impact on us and which foods are not. And I'm so happy to have the opportunity to be able to teach this program here in my office at Mountain at 903 Franklin Avenue here in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. And this Sunday, March 8th, I'm giving a workshop from 3 p.m. to 4:30. It's an hour and a half workshop of how to heal your body with food, how to understand your body's symptoms, what your body is telling you, and how to make those changes seamlessly. And I hope you will join me. If you want to RSVP, then you can just send me an email at millielytle@gmail.com or look me up on Facebook at Millie Says, and I'm here to help you change your relationship to food. And I'm also here to help John Connors change his, I don't know if he really needs to change. You're a chef, right, John?
Well, yeah, a trained chef. You know, I will admit I cook more to connect with others, so I'm not always the best about cooking for myself. So, but I do have today, you know, quinoa, sweet potato, and some sunflower seeds. I've limited my meat since December of 2013. I had done a trip to Mexico and sort of changed my eating habits. I didn't eliminate it from my diet completely, but minimized it. And I've been reducing my alcohol consumption because as an Irish kid, I've got a little bit of anger karma that I'm working on, and part of the bike ride is to get through that as well, use it in a positive way. I understand healthy food, but, you know, dollar pizza still calls my name sometimes, you know. sugary goods, like I admitted, help spurt me and get me going to the last leg of my trip, although I know it's for the best for me. So having somebody to hold me accountable and really guide me through the best decisions is really going to be priceless.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to set you up with my nutrition app so you're able to photograph your meals. And then we can, and you just take using your smartphone, you just take a snapshot of your meal. And if anything is kind of going awry, if your energy is sluggish, then I can actually help intervene even if you're 3,000 miles away.
Awesome. That's great. And I'll be able to definitely weave that into the video narrative as well. So I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I use an app that I call for the Face Your Food app, but it's developed by a company called Mimi because it's all about you and paying attention to your own symptoms. And so it's a great tool to help people just have a realistic look at what you're eating, and not only what you're eating, but when you're eating. Because when you're training, especially for physical activity, of course you need more calories. But you also want sustainable calories. So you also want smart calories. So it's not just about the amount of calories.
Okay.
It's also about what those calories are comprised of and how much nutrition density they have, essentially.
How about timing, too? Because sometimes I'll get done later in the evening is the more profitable shift, and I spend my daytime in my coaching practice. So, you know, maybe I'll get home at 11 o'clock at night after a few hours of riding, and I get hungry. So sometimes I find myself eating half a jar of peanut butter at, you know, from 11 to 1 in the morning, which is so not good for me. You know, I would love a little assistance there, too, as a way to carb my maybe hunger pangs at that time of the day and get rid of the little belly I have, even though I am working and riding a bike so much. I think it's due to what I'm eating so late at night.
Right. And so are you going to have a riding schedule as you're going across the country?
At this moment in time, I didn't exactly think of that. I mean, I'm more going with the schedule that arises organically from the Raving Fan Network. And I have been told that since I'm going east to west, not west to east, the wind is going to be against me. So I have been advised by some people who've made that trip before that in certain Great Plains states to ride later in the evening into the nighttime because the wind is less punishing on you. So that is something I will be developing and will be in touch with you is what the plan is there.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're going to ride late at night, then you are going to be kind of going against the circadian clock, so to speak. I'm really into the 24-hour clock as a way to manage our metabolism because our hormones do fluctuate naturally through the day, so our cortisol levels go up at night if we are not asleep. And cortisol levels going up at night means that we're also liberating more blood sugar and we're raising our blood sugar levels, which gives our body more opportunity to store fat. And so you do want to kind of like work, if you're planning on exercising at night, you do kind of want to be taking like adaptogens like super mushrooms and things like that that help to lower your stress levels. And it could even be some like maca powder, some real superfoods that not only help to give you energy and, you know, give us the right amount of protein, which is certainly important, but also help to reduce those cortisol levels because your sleep will be off if you're doing exercise like that at night. You can't just exercise for the cycle for 4 hours in the evening and then go to sleep right away.
Yeah, it's impossible. Yeah, I mean, that's only in specific states. Otherwise, you know, when it's normal and the wind isn't punishing, I will be going around light because it's safer to ride during the daytime hours.
And so when you, before you go out and ride, then the foods that you want to focus on eating are slower burning fats and complex carbohydrates. So you need carbs at that time because that's when you need to increase your blood sugar level so that you'll have some energy for the first, at least the first half an hour of the ride before your body starts to rely on stored fuel for its calories. So for the first half an hour of any training, then your body is just burning the available sugar in the blood, essentially. And so you need to kind of like eat before you start any ride. You need to eat something within about a half an hour, which has carbohydrates and then also preferably fat. So it's slow burning fuel. So that would be a good time to have like banana peanut butter sandwich or like a shake that you have some of your so hemp seeds and some berries or some fruit juice to keep you energized and having stamina for the initial part of the ride. And then when you are riding, then that's the time to keep hydrated with electrolytes and water so that you're burning up your minerals, you're able to replace them. You're able to replace your magnesium and your calcium and your bicarbonate, maybe in some liquid drink. So that could be anything from like having electrolyte powders, which has those nutrients in them, or it could be lemon water, or it could be certain like nettle teas that have a lot of minerals in them. Those ways to maintain your hydration. And then when you're done cycling, then that's the time where you do actually want to increase your amount of protein with a little bit of carbohydrates. And so having protein within an hour and a half of finishing a ride, especially when you're using lots of muscles, is going to encourage muscle growth. It's going to encourage muscle repair. And so it is really important to have something within an hour and a half window after you're done working out. And this is true when you're training as well as when you're riding. So the fact that's a good time to have like a protein powder or have a fish dinner or have your chicken or have, and so this does come at a cost if you're going to eat a full meal late at night. So if it's going to be late, then you want to maybe make it a more digestible protein, like a whatever kind of protein powders you're going to be eating, whether it's whey protein powder or hemp protein powder or cricket protein powder or whatever
cricket,
it is, and you want to do that after the ride.
Okay, thank you.
So that's kind of the flow of how you manage, and then those electrolytes that you'll be having in the water are going to help reduce your lactic acid buildup, so that you're going to allow your muscles to recover from the loss of those minerals causing that lactic acid buildup, which people feel as pain, you know, that burn that you get when you're exercising all the time, partially can be recovered by recovering your minerals, your magnesium levels in particular, but then also some of the amino acids that are found in the proteins that you'll be eating afterwards. So L-carnosine and L-carnitine are important amino acids to help the muscles recover. And those are found in all the protein that is required for the rebuilding of the muscle fibers once you're done shredding them, tearing them apart during the cycle. So that's kind of like an overview, like a flow of how you would do it. But certainly also consuming calories regularly, never going more than 3 hours without eating some kind of calories, and maybe even 2 hours. So
wow.
That not only your blood sugar stays elevated, but also and for your own stamina, but that also you're able to think and focus and concentrate. Because what happens if you go for a long period of time, like if you're cycling for 4 hours in a row, let's say, without giving yourself any calories during that time, your body might still be fine to keep going because it's running on adrenaline and it's running on the endorphins that have kicked in. That's the cyclist high. And also your body is burning stored fuel as fat.
Mm.
But your brain's not going to be able to maintain its focus because it won't have any blood sugar available for it anymore.
Yes.
And so then you can make mistakes and you can get confused. And so really to keep up, to continue being sharp, then you do want to take something. And that's the kind of time to take more simple sugars. So whether it's dates or raisins or some kind of like guava juice or something that has fiber but sugar content as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is exciting. It's exciting that you're doing this ride, and that you're working with, nutritionists, nutrition companies, and I'm really happy to be involved in this process with you. And let's tell other people how they can get involved if they have a business, or if they have an idea, or if they have some kind of venture, or even if they have a space for you to stay at or a home for you to
absolutely.
Come and meet them.
Very well said. So prosumercoach@gmail.com is my email. I will be posting a wiki that will showcase my route, where I'll be able to let people know in about a week ahead of time where I'm heading, and then longer than that, what direction I'm moving in. But I do want to allow for some deviation from that path. But I'm really looking for people to help me out. I'm really looking for people to participate in this ride. I'm the one personally riding at this moment. With me on the road, there might not be, but those who participate in the ride showcase prosumerism, showcase that we can create, in a way, a super organism where we help each other out. And if anybody has an aunt, an uncle, or self personally along the route, I'll be starting out from New York to Detroit to Chicago, and then I'm going to dip down and go Route 50 towards the center of the nation, so through Provo, Utah, I believe, through Colorado Springs, Colorado, through Kansas City. If you have anybody in those towns and you're excited about this vision and you want to learn more and talk more, that's what I'm here to do. And I'm really excited to be able to work with you, Millie, because I do want to be able to ride 60 miles in a day and still talk to people at night in a very nice way, really get people motivated and excited and empowered to take their own action and move forward
long after I'm gone.
Yeah, so you want to have the energy and the stamina for your ride, but then also for the interaction and the relationship building in the evening.
Big time. Yeah, it would be impossible without it.
Yeah, so we're definitely gonna help you along with that. And so what kind of tools are you bringing with you?
Kind of tools?
Like are you bringing a scope or are you bringing what kind of tools are you bringing?
Did you see a scope? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm riding with, you know, four bike bags, four pannier bags, and one of the bags is going to have a cook stove in it and some of my cooking materials. Bike tools-wise, I'm taking a course either with a friend of mine who we're also working on an arrangement to promote what he does. He's a bike activist. He's either going to teach me or I'm going to go through Time's Up. Learn basic bike maintenance stuff that's needed to keep me up and running. So I've been learning a little bit about it since I've been training since September and riding through all types of weather. So I'll be needing a, you know, tool set for that. And then my camera equipment and audio equipment will be the tools that I need to promote the communications element of the ride.
So you're going to be carrying a heavy load with you.
80 pounds probably on top of my weight. So the Rockies are going to be tough, I've been told.
And so how long do you project that this is going to take?
If I budget 50 miles a day at 3,150 miles, that's about 63 days without stopping, without day off. I'm not going to do that. So I've doubled the days to, you know, 125 days or so, 4.5 months-ish. And to give myself time to stop and have that relationship-building element of it. So I'm looking to leave in early June and get to San Francisco in mid-October.
Wow. And so, and then this could really change your life. Like, do you have plans for after it's done? Like, will you come back to New York, or is it all open for you? Or?
Great question. So as a lean startup kind of guy, where I go where the data is showing me it works, I'm either going to there's three real options on the table. One, come back to New York, because I do love it here. It is a great city. Two would be raise money for a prosumer headquarters, where, like I said, I want to live every day my message and teach as many people as possible that way. And I do think a cheaper industrial city region where I could have a wall peony and grow all my own stuff. Like I said, I could literally outfit a place for $15,000 in Detroit. That would be very beneficial for me. So I may go that route. Or third, I may outfit a van or an old bus and continue traveling with the prosumer message for a longer period of time. But I don't want to make that decision until I've spent 4 months on the road and then decide whether or not I want to settle in somewhere or continue the proselytizing of the message.
How did you get involved in prosumerism and become so passionate about it?
Great question. I am a prosumer. I always have been. I read about, the first time I heard the word itself was in a book called Wikinomics, Wikipedia-nomics. And it was a geeky business school style book back in 06. And then he wrote another book called Macroeconomics, John Tapscott and Anthony Williams. John Tapscott is a Canadian, very high-level economic thinker, called Macroeconomics, which then took Wikinomics-based prosumer principles into the macroeconomy and into the political sphere. So I was shocked that these kind of things were not happening as quickly as maybe they felt like they should be happening. And I continued to live my life and prosume goods and services without thinking I could make a career out of it. Once Occupy Wall Street came around, and I saw that as much as one could think politically one way or another about it, either way, everybody that participated in Occupy had a prosumer role in Occupy. And I saw that instead of maybe a movement where people are against an entire industry, I'd much rather see that same movement towards building an entire new system of doing things. So after Occupy, I really
really cut my teeth in the communications world and recognized I could possibly make a difference there. And I've been embarking on making prosumerism a profession for the last 3 years now.
And so I guess Wikipedia is a prosumer company, is it?
Oh, good. It's the best example in human history. So there's never been an encyclopedia that's been able to keep up with Wikipedia. And their percentage failure rate misinformation rate is lower than any single encyclopedia that's ever been created. It has more information in Wikipedia than the Library of Alexandria way back in the ancient times. And it's still growing. It's growing every single day with participants who don't get paid uploading information and data and creating this gorgeous masterpiece we can all look to and reflect information from every day.
Yeah, I mean, one of my friends posted something recently on Facebook that, like, how many times a day do you refer to Wikipedia for information gathering? I mean, if you Google something, it really directs you to Wikipedia. I mean, it's the most, Google really relies on Wikipedia, right?
Big time. It is a force that we haven't yet fully understood. I mean, Wikipedia has, I think, less than 100 paid employees, and they upkeep that as a nonprofit organization. You can do prosumerism from a profit way as well, but they are literally the gold standard as far as prosumerism goes, and it showcases how superior Wikipedia is compared to any other competitor. Nobody, encyclopedias are out of business now. So the collaboration of human beings all committed to doing one thing, and with Wikipedia it happens to be spreading information in a digestible format, there's nothing that can stop when humans decide to mass collaborate. Nothing that can compete on that level.
That's interesting because, you know, if you write scientific literature, like I've authored scientific papers in the past, and when you write scientific literature, you can't refer to Wikipedia. I mean, it's not a credible source. However, Wikipedia, you know, it's not officially a credible source. I'm not saying they're not a credible source. But just in research, you have to refer to primary research, which is the research that's been published by the person who's published it. And, of course, I mean, there's so much publication bias with that. There's just as much as any kind of Wikipedia platform. But there are some journals. There's particularly one journal, actually, called PLOS ONE, which is a scientific or medical-related journal, which actually is open source. And so they really have taken they've followed suit from Wikipedia in that they don't require a subscription, a lot more articles, like with a more open mindset, let's say, not just the mandate of the journal, of like JAMA or The Lancet or, any of these medical association journals. Doesn't have their mandate. It actually just follows more, you know, what people are interested in, what scientists are saying these days. And in that way, it's a much more, it is a prosumerist approach to research because it really just leaves the field open for so much more offerings and contributions from a wider variety of researchers and really covers the topics of the day that people are really actually interested in instead of just, you know, the funded ones. And also, it doesn't cost anything to read the journal articles, whereas so many other journal articles are closed and you have
that
subscription. And so it's really just open. And so the more I think about it, the longer that we're on this interview, is really the more examples of prosumerist companies or enterprises out there that have really come down the pipeline. And as you were talking, the Wikinomics, How Mass Collaboration Changes Everything, that book you cited by John Tarscott, that was only published in 2006. It was only 9 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. A couple of things. First, I'll talk about an activist who tried to force prosumerism down the throat of an industrial paradigm. Aaron Rodgers, maybe. He was one of the starters of Reddit. So Reddit is a site where many early adopters get their information. He was a young whiz kid and really, really prevalent on the internet scene on how things are going to change.
Well, he was upset at exactly what you just talked about, how academic research is paid for actually by public funds, yet it can only be received on the other end if you pay for it again. So he's like, no, it's public domain knowledge because the public paid for it. So instead of going through the quote-unquote proper channels and trying to create a massive online database with which to search scientific literature, because most scientists have their aha moment when they're reading something else in a way. Like when you step out of your silo and you step into maybe physicists can learn a ton from biologists. You can learn a ton from different perspectives. Well, this kid Aaron ended up going to MIT, breaking into their database and taking a bunch of files that were, you know, would have been paid for. And then some say he was going to release them for free as a way to force prosumerism on the consumer paradigm. And the federal government went down on him real hard, and he ended up taking his own life. But, you know, that was just one 2011 Occupy Wall Street kind of catalyst moment where, you know, I wouldn't want prosumerism becoming a zealotry kind of ideology where people put their life on the line in that way. But there are some people who are that committed to making public knowledge, Wikipedia style, they call it the commons, and really advance humanity forward to a new renaissance.
Amazing. It's been a pleasure having you on, John Connors. Today I've been interviewing John Connors. He's a business coach. He is an activist who's committed to the social movement of prosumerism, and he's cycling across the country, embarking on the hashtag ProsumeOurFuture right across America. So ProsumeOurFuture is a hashtag, and you can reach him there on Twitter, or you can follow him along at, please give your information out again, John.
ProsumerCoach@gmail.com and ProsumerCoach.tumblr, T-U-M-B-L-R, not A-R, like some people say, T-U-M-B-L-R.com.
Amazing. And we've been having a terrific conversation about how you can include prosumer activities, prosumer economy into your lifestyle. And maybe actually I'll just say we have a few minutes left, John. Maybe you could just talk about other ways that people can incorporate the concept of prosumer into their life without going, you know, completely changing their lifestyle. Just some examples.
Sure. I believe we would just begin with a consumer journal. What is it you're buying? And the moment you start to purchase with consciousness, you at least start to you know, have some sort of accountability for what it is you're bringing into your life. So that's what I work with everybody on the very first step is to first observe. Observe your purchasing behaviors. You don't have to bring judgment to it. It's kind of like a meditation. Just observe what you do on a day-to-day basis. And from there, a lot can unravel and a lot can open up.
Cool. Yeah, that's a great idea. Just track what you buy. What do you spend your money on? It's good for your budget, too, to observe that kind of thing. It's good to, you know, even if you spend a few dollars here, a few dollars there. And so that's great advice from a coach. He is a coach, after all. And so here on Eating for Meaning, we are wanting to help you change and improve your health. We're wanting to help you change your relationship to food, but even on a larger scale, on a more macro scale, we are also wanting to help you look in your greater environment by what's influencing your choices and what choices you have. And so in hopes that you can see that you have the power to make decisions and that you don't have to be a passive consumer, that you actually can intervene and step in at any moment and decide to grow your own food or decide to buy healthier food, or decide to boycott genetically modified foods, or decide that you want your family to be healthier. You want to solve their health problems naturally. You want to be in charge of the health of your family without relying on prescription medications or without running to the doctor every moment. We are trying to help you develop your home medicine cabinet, which starts in your kitchen. Your kitchen is the primary place where you are seeking, either you are choosing that your food be medicine. And if you are not choosing explicitly that your food is medicine and knowing that that food that you're eating is right for you, then you are passively choosing that your food is poison and that your food is making you sick. And there are so many opportunities. Every single time you pick up a fork, every single time you engage with your diet and your lifestyle, every decision that you make in regards to putting food in your mouth, you have an opportunity to become healthier or you have an opportunity to become sicker. And depending on your level of health and where you are on your health journey, this can be very tricky, and I'm here to help you with that, and that's why I've dedicated this show, and that's why I bring on these wonderful guests who really cause us to think outside the box so that we can become aware of where we are and what our participation is in society. And my guest today, John Connors, truly, authentically helped us see many different examples of where we can participate in our own lifestyle and improve our health. If you liked what you heard today, please do follow the show. This is Eating for Meaning on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to contact me directly, then go to my website, please, at www.milliesays.com, or join me next week at noon Eastern Time on Thursday.
Thank you, Millie, and I really look forward to your guidance as I try.